Welcome to SestraCast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm rewatching this series for the third time. My co-host Kathy Campbell is watching for the first time, so we make sure not to spoil any storylines beyond the episode we are currently discussing. So, hey Kathy, how's it going this week?
It's going pretty good. I cannot believe we've made it to season four.
Yes.
Holy cow.
Oh my, we're officially over 60% done with Orphan Black now.
What am I going to do when I don't have a reason to talk to you all the time?
Oh, I'm sure we'll think of something. I was actually thinking we should start over. The Orphan Black rewatch.
Right.
But maybe we have to find some new guinea pig to join us that hasn't watched it at all. Anyway.
Oh, there we go. We'll figure that out.
That's one reason. One way to go. It is hard to stop watching Orphan Black, as I am clear evidence of. And so I don't know how you're going to do when you get to the end. I think you will want to start over.
Probably.
But this episode, this week, is almost like starting over.
Yeah, it really threw me off. You know, so the opening part is there's this person who's wearing a mask and creeping through the forest. And of course, being Orphan Black, you're like, okay, what's going on? And we're seeing a body getting buried and the person throws a sticker on the tree. And I'm like, okay, that's weird too. And then a phone is ringing and it looks, and I'm in my notes, I put, okay, someone called Sarah, who's MK. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Beth. What is going on? And then Paul comes back and I get very excited. Even knowing how he's not really still alive, but I was very excited that we got to do some stuff. The timeline, we can see where Beth is, you know, based on, because she's taking some of her drugs.
Yes. She's taking snorting a lot of drugs.
A lot of her drugs. And so that very well set up kind of the premise of this episode. It's just like, hey, let's tease you into where are we, what's going on? And then you see, learn that it's Beth. So you're like, okay, this must be a flashback. And then you, like, the person takes off the mask and it's another clone. And I'm just like, da-da. What?
Another clone. This one with bangs.
Right. Which makes a big difference.
Yes. Well, and then it's time for the credits. I have a couple things to say about the beginning of season four. You've very well described that first scene where it's like, what? Who? Oh, wait, Paul? You know, they shot that perfectly the way
they did.
The person, the sheep mask person says, don't trust anyone next to you. And then Paul, like, comes into the shot sitting up in bed and you're like, whoa. So, yes, but this is episode one of season four and it's called The Collapse of Nature. And as you know, in season three, we were very much into looking at the origin of the episode titles that all came from the farewell address of President Dwight Eisenhower. Now, this season is going to be a little trickier, and I'm not sure if we'll be able to do it because I know I have done as much research as I could humanly do in an hour to try to find out the exact reference of the collapse of nature. I mean, I did, you know, find out these titles in this season are based on the work of Donna Haraway, she's distinguished American history professor emeritus in the History of Consciousness Department and Feminist Studies Department at UC Santa Cruz. And she's written many books about cyborgs and humans and like the social economic, you know, nexus around that. And from what I can tell, the titles in this season come from a scholarly article, not a BuzzFeed article. called The Biological Enterprise, Sex, Mind, and Profit from Human Engineering to Sociobiology, which appeared in the Radical History Review in 1979. So finding that article easily has not been possible. I am going to try to find it at some point because I really do want to read it now and sort of see how these titles fit in to the article itself. But even the title of the article kind of sets the stage. We're talking about human engineering and profit and sex. And that's like all Orphan Black favorite topics.
Right. It all kind of works together. And especially with this concentration on Neolution that we're hopping back to.
Into. Exactly.
Yeah.
And one more thing I want to say about the credits, like I always try to pay attention to who's actually getting credited. And Dylan Bruce, who plays Paul, he had dropped off the credits, the opening credits, after his demise in season 3. But he's back in the opening credits. And Ari Millen, who played the Castor clones, has dropped off of the opening credits. And Christian Brune, who plays Donnie, gets his own credit all, you know, to himself. And so, and there's no Evelyn Brochu, who is, of course, Delphine. Yeah, in season 3, Jordan Gavaris got second billing after Tatiana, and he still gets second billing in season 4, even though Dylan Bruce came back. Dylan Bruce was second billing in season 1 and 2. So Paul was an important character, and I'm glad to see him back, along with other friends. But
yes.
We should get into it. We have analyzed our best way to discuss this episode, and it is basically a very linear story about Beth. I don't know if you could even call it a flashback. It's kind of like season 0, episode 1.
Right.
In a way.
It's really interesting that this is the way that they started season 4, because there's all of these things that are going to happen in this episode that if we had seen them in season 1, yes, it would have told the story. But because we know how Paul is going to die, we know how Dr. Leakey is going to die, we know all of these things that are going to happen. Well, and of course, we know Beth is going to die. And so all of the scenes have that added bit of extra, extra meaning. And all of this, because we know what Paul's relationship is with Beth. We know, like, what Dr. Leakey ends up doing. All of these things make it. And we know, you know, Maggie Chen, we know how that happens. And so, like, seeing what brought that on and knowing now, I mean, and we'll talk about it when we get into that part, but, like, it adds this information and makes such a larger impact onto the story as a whole. And it's just another brilliant way that the writers and everyone just made this so, everything is so deliberate, which is just fantastic. It's just great. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I honestly, it's been a long time since I've watched season 4. Episodes, and I forgot that the season opens with this, you know, step way back in time and bringing back characters that we didn't know that well. Some of them we didn't know hardly at all, and explaining some things that, you know, we only knew about from Sarah's point of view.
Right.
So, but yeah, so after the credits, we're back in the forest. Now we got the whole scene of crime thing, and which is great because we know Art is coming back. I mean, not that he was gone, but there wasn't much of Art in season 3. He was only in 4 episodes. That's another little factoid I checked out when I was comparing this season to previous seasons. And he, you know, he and Beth are there to investigate this body that was dumped, which the sheep mask girl had witnessed the dumping of this body. And there, that's what she was, you know, giving Beth a, that was, you know, a tip off, you know, from her informant, as it were. So you have the medical examiner there who's all like, yeah, let's open up our present. She's really like, this is going to be fun.
And super excited.
She's making all these snarky comments. And, you know, the first thing they see about the body is that the cheek, one cheek has been removed, you know, sort of exposing like the teeth and the jaw. It's really, I forgot this ooey part, the couple of the icky parts in this one. But then the Emmy's opening the whole body bag, and she goes like, oh, don't see that every day. And I'm thinking, what can it be that you would mention it but not show it? And she's
right.
Like, it's a surgically bifurcated penis.
Yeah, that sounds like a really painful surgery.
Art is like, I don't see the point of that.
I know. I love that that was his reaction. Like, what's the purpose? What's the goal?
Yeah. So, so the Emmys, well, you know, she's saying the cheek has been removed, you know, very skillfully in postmortem, but she sees signs of a struggle. And then Art and Beth are going off to, you know, I guess continue their investigation, but he's like, let's go to Fong's. And I'm like thinking, I don't know if it was season one, episode one or two. I didn't really try to find that out, but there was this tiny, you know, moment where Art says, let's go to Fong's. And Sarah, who's pretending to be Beth, is like saying to herself, well, what the heck is Fong's? And I remember, you know, so we learn like, oh, Fung's is the place they always go after they've seen bifurcated penises and cheeks removed.
Right. Like you do.
Yeah. And on the way, Beth is, you know, she's in her own car and she gets a phone call on the clone phone from Cosima, who she's packing up to move to, she's moving to a new program. So they show like UC Berkeley in the background. So apparently, you know, we know Cosima's from Berkeley and she's moving to be closer to Beth and Allison hasn't deposited the money that she's supposed to. And Cosima's needs funds and she's complaining that Allison wants an expense report.
Right. Which is so very Allison. Yeah. And this is, you can tell, like you can just see the stress level on Beth, yeah. And it over the episode it just kind of grows more and more. All of these things are on her, and she's trying to balance each pathway mm-hmm. of what's going on. And it's just it's so heartbreaking to see.
Yeah, no, it really is. Yeah. So then they're at Fong's, Art and Beth, and you know, so what we learn, you know, from this conversation is Beth's been shaky for a couple of months, which we assume is like when she found out about the clones and she started, you know, researching, you know, where the other clones were. And she's been doing all sorts of drugs, which has been noticed, not just by Art. And right. She has problems in her relationship, you know, she says shite relationship, except Beth doesn't say shite. you know, Art, she's, you know, they have this conversation, she and Art, where she says, like, you remember your divorce? And he's like, well, I remember that you were there when I needed you. And Beth says, I don't need you yet. And said, you know, it's my, boy, Beth curses a lot. It's going to be hard to. She really curses, and it's not British. So I don't want to bleep out all the S-H-I-T's, but that's what she says.
It's, shirt.
It's my shirt. Don't take it on. And then in walks, you know, Angie, who we haven't seen in a long time.
Right. I mean,
obviously, this is a flashback. And it's like, I couldn't remember. I thought, were Beth and Angie like buds? No, they were not.
No, definitely not.
So DeAngelis, Detective DeAngelis, is all snarky. How are you doing, Beth? And Beth is leaving, and Angie looks at Art and says, she's shaky, dude. And Art, ever the loyal partner, says she's fine.
I know. I missed Art.
Yeah. In
the last season, his loyalty is pretty great. Almost as amazing as Felix's loyalty, who shows up in the police station.
Yes.
So Beth arrives and you see Felix, who's getting brought in for solicitation, and there's some banter between the cop there, and it's very amusing. Yeah. And we get to see Raj as well.
Yeah, Raj. Who thought he was coming back?
Right?
The guy with the surveillance gear that Beth wants to borrow. And, you know, he was, in the first couple of episodes, I wouldn't say he was a major character, but it was a major plot point that Sarah discovers all this surveillance gear because Raj asks for it back.
Right. Which is pretty, it's layer upon layers of building on stuff that happened in season one. Mm-hmm. That just it's beautifully additioned, and mm-hmm. you get to have this moment of, oh, hey, it's Raj.
And actually that gives us a little bit of a time, you know, mark, because in season one, right in the beginning, Raj is asking for that equipment back. And so right. we know that didn't happen years later, that, you know, if he was nervous about lending out official equipment, he would be asking for it back in the not, you know, too distant future. So the timing from this episode to the point where episode one, season one begins, can't be, it's not a very large, long time frame, I would think.
Yeah.
She also sees the captain, who asks Art, is she making her meetings? And Art, again, lying for her, says yes. But yeah, I was more concerned about Beth than I realized, you know, from the Beth we got to know through Sarah, which was, yes, she had a lot of drugs in her cabinet, but I didn't realize she was like popping them constantly, which she was.
Yeah.
And she wasn't going to any meetings. For sure.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. So Beth goes out. She's in a trailer park. There's like a rickety old, camping trailer.
I think it's more of a junkyard has a trailer in it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, it's a lot of junk, and the trailer just kind of fits in with all the rest of the junk, which is great because it's a hideout for the new clone, Mika, who is adorable. I like her hair.
I like her hairs too.
And it's not. So Beth is obviously meeting her, and she comes in and nobody's there, and Mika's actually on the computer. So she's this extra layer of protection and safety. And you can just see that Beth is not quite as paranoid as she could be in the future.
Yeah.
And Mika's just like trying to handle it and try to deal with her. And like, no, this is what's going on. You know, were you followed? I saw you came up in a car, and this whole, like, all of these layers of paranoia. Beth just kind of throws it off. She doesn't see the fear as much or the concern as I think Mika would like her to have. Mika has, like, brought more information. Mm-hmm. So they... At one point, it talks about how they tracked a Neolutionist to the police station, and, oh, it could be your partner. And, of course, Beth is just like, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. But we get some more information on basically Beth is finding out about the Neolutionists mm-hmm. and where to go to and get information. And hopefully they'll be able to figure out what the heck is going on, mm-hmm. who's trying to hunt them, who's trying to get them, all of that. And so we learn along with Beth where Beth learned it.
Yeah. Mika tells her to go start a club Neolution. So we're back there.
Yes.
And there's Astrid. Didn't think we'd see her again. The henchman of Olivier. And yes. Beth says, "Hey, I'm looking to have my breasts surgically modified into corkscrews."
Right. Which sounds awkward.
Uh-huh. And Astrid is all, "Oh, I'm sorry, members only." And then, you know, Beth flashes her badge and goes on in. And Astrid calls Olivier, because, of course, it's his club, if we remember right. correctly from season one. And he's getting some trousers fitted right for his right. tail, and it's like the tail is back.
I don't know how I managed to forget the tail. I think I blocked it out of my
your subconscious yeah. repressed that back four seasons ago.
Yes, for sure. But yeah, it was like, and the subtle movement and just the real
creepy. And yeah, that's just, you know, reminding me of like, oh yeah, when when the series started out, there was so much creepiness front loaded, and that was one of the creepier things. And but you know, and Astrid warns them that there's a cop there, and her name is Beth Childs. So Olivier knows who Beth Childs is because he's the handler of her monitor, Paul. We know that from season one as well.
Right.
What we didn't know is that you could implant magnets in your fingertips.
Right.
Some, like, you know, little surgery going on right in the club. And this this woman is explaining to Beth that, oh, you know, she can put magnets in your fingertips. And Beth says, does she ever bifurcate dicks? And she's like, that's not an enhancement. That's
not right. Like, okay, let's get the science between the difference of them.
There, Beth sees a copy of Dr. Leakey's book is back, too. Didn't expect to see that again. And so she gets a copy of Leakey's book while this Neolution chick is pulling a pen out of her pocket with her magnet fingertips. And she's, you know, Beth is asking her, did she know Edward Capra? And another guy shows up next to her and says, like, nope, we don't know him. It's like the classic, you know, we don't know him. Yes, we really do know him, but we are talking to cops, so we don't tell them anything. And
right.
that's how that scene ends, as I recall. Then Beth's outside on the phone with Allison. That was funny.
Oh, man. So she's getting delivery. And this show, who shows up but Ramon?
Ramon
is back now too. And so we know where Beth gets her drugs from. Mm-hmm. And I love the conversation that they have about the florals.
Yes, that like
it was so Allison.
Allison's like, yes, I made that arrangement myself, and none of this like flashy tropicals that they're all into now. And I thought, this is important when you're handing off drugs and urine and a gun. Oh no, not a gun, sorry. Beth sent Allison a gun.
Yes. Which Allison is playing with.
She's really playing
while talking. Yes. And Beth makes her promise not to gun up right. until Beth has shown me basic gun safety. And of course, she's playing with it while she says, I promise.
Yeah. She's like, oh, I so want to shoot something right now. You know, I just want to blast someone with this thing. And Beth is like, yeah, I know the feeling.
And yeah.
She says, okay. And I also promise to deposit Cosima's money in the bank now. And that's when Allison says, all right, but you're going to have to manage this going forward because I can't be running to the bank all the time, which I was like, why not, Allison?
Right.
So, but it fits in with what you were saying earlier, which is not only, you know, is she like the go-to person for all these clones, she's also like, she's also the executive director of the Clone Foundation and has to manage right. the bank account.
Yeah, so she's getting, because I can imagine when she learned about the clones and found Allison and Cosima, it was more of a mutual, hey, Cosima's going to do the science stuff and Beth will do the cop type things and Allison will do the money and manage that and whatnot. And here's one more thing on Beth's plate.
Yeah.
I don't think Allison and Cosima knew Mika. I don't, based on this episode, it looks like Beth kept her separate.
Yeah.
And so Beth is that connection between those clones. She's trying to manage what they know versus what Mika knows, and now has to deal with the money. And Cosima was calling to get, you know, like, I'm sure Beth had to be in charge of housing and like a job and getting all of these things on top of her own relationship with Paul, on top of her own relationship with Art, on top of her job. Like, the stress, you're just feeling it along with everything that adds on. And it's so hard.
Yeah.
But she did get a very nice bedazzled card from Allison.
Yes.
So that was good.
Yes. If this were truly the first episode of Orphan Black, you would know pretty much all you needed to know about Allison in the beginning from this one little interaction. So that was funny. So then they go to Dr. Leakey, who's on the phone with Olivier, of course, because Leakey was Olivier's manager, if we're talking corporation org chart.
Right.
And he's like, just tell Paul to take her on a holiday. And Olivier is like, no, Beth needs a new monitor. That relationship is disintegrating. But, you know, Leakey's like, we don't have anybody like ready to go, and I'll take care of it. And then a totally new character shows up, this Asian woman, and she says, is there a problem? And Leakey says to her, one of my subjects seems to have exhumed one of yours.
Yes. So that sets up exactly who she is, which was interesting.
Yes.
And I loved that connection, especially because Beth shows up, because as this is all happening, Dr. Leakey's kind of presenting himself as Dr. Leakey does. And so these people are coming up and asking for signatures and autographs and handshaking and you know, the celebrity that he is. And Beth arrives with the book that she took as an excuse to get an autograph. And so they talk and have that interaction. And after Beth leaves, the Evie Cho, who is the lady we met before, is like, she's never met one of them before.
Yeah.
And you could see almost her excitement of actually getting to meet a clone without officially meeting her.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show the amount of like people that are involved and aware without really being involved.
Yeah.
Well, which I found interesting.
I think it was a very deft introduction of a new character in an old timeline. And it was a weird scene because Beth was totally ignoring her. She was totally focused on Leakey, and there was kind of and even when she introduced herself, you know, that Evie Cho introduced herself to Beth, she kind of had to force herself to introduce herself, and she's like, how are you connected? You know, it had a little bit of a, oh, I'm sorry, I overlooked you, Asian woman, in favor of white, you know, old man who is the author of this book. And, you know, it's not, it was kind of a funny scene that way, because it was my one, possibly one time feeling sorry for Evie Cho.
Yeah.
But, you know, she is, she's apparently involved, according to Leakey's comment, she's involved with the Cheek Choppers, so
right.
I'm not going to be very sympathetic towards her.
No, we're good.
Then back at the precinct, and you and I, before the show, we were talking about how, yay, there's more Law and Order Clone Edition.
Yes.
We can talk about the detectives and the captain and the various sergeants. And anyway, Beth is called back in by the captain and says, like, your tip, you know, that came on your phone was traced, but it was traced to a burner phone. So it could be somebody you know, somebody you don't know. Either way, you're off the case. Which, you know, was like, she was mad about that, obviously, because that is her case, like, in more ways than one.
Right.
Then this random detective pokes his head in saying, like, hey, I need to see you later. And it's like, oh, just throw a random guy into a scene for no reason at all.
Yeah. Yeah. This is Orphan Black. That's not how it works.
So, yeah, some mustachioed, bearded guy. We'll never see him again, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yep. Totally.
Meanwhile, also, the captain says, and you got to go see your union rep. It's, you know, it's time for a piss test. Now, because Beth got urine from Allison, but which was very funny when Beth said, now this isn't your urine, right? Because of course Allison wouldn't pass either.
Right.
She says, oh no, it's from my daughter, which I was surprised by. But yes, Beth uses a little girl's pee to pass the piss test and gets her equipment from Raj and sets it up in her apartment, sets up a camera. She's got the power tools and everything, and I was admiring her do-it-yourself you know, abilities.
Yes. She can handle it all herself.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's a cop. It makes sense that she would be able to do it all herself.
Yeah.
I'm sure she probably has done it a variety of times in different locations as stuff and things. We'll go with that.
Okay. Yeah. And then next we see her, she's set the dinner table. It's all fancy. She's dressed in up in a nice little black dress and she's snorting coke when Paul comes home.
Yeah. Which, earlier in the episode, Paul is, you know, trying to talk to Beth and he's wants to know where she's, like, when she's going to be home or, like, what she's doing as a monitor, not really the boyfriend, because you can tell Beth is just not having it. And so he's like, well, I want to make dinner for you as an excuse for wanting to know when she'll be home. And so seeing that Beth made dinner, I thought was a very interesting, like, swap.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he asks about her day. And, you know, did she have a good day? And she says, no. And he says, you know, I'm thinking I've got some time coming to me. We should go on a holiday. Oh, he just spontaneously thought of that from Dr. Leakey's ear mouth to Olivier to Paul. Beth is being offered a holiday in the Barbados, which if she didn't have all the clone stuff going on, she should just go.
Seriously. Like,
just go on the holiday, Beth, please. But no, she's at this point, she's convinced that Paul is some kind of spy on her. And she's challenging him, you know, to be her boyfriend, to be her lover instead of, you know, all I need is a lover that can look me in the eyes. And he can't because,
yeah,
it's a very moving and disturbing scene of a relationship going south, regardless of the reasons. It seemed very real, like it could have been any drama about people who are not on the same wavelength.
Yeah. And when she says, can you see me? Can you knit me together or just tear me apart? That was just heartbreaking. And he is pulling away and goes to sit down on the couch and she's talking to him and pulls out her gun to shoot him while she's like trying to get him to see her as a human again, to see her as a person. And it's just, you can tell that Paul is just wanting him to shoot, wanting her to shoot him. He's got tears in his eyes and is emotional. It's just like, he's ready for this to be done. He's ready to stop the lies. But of course he can't because of what he did in his past. And so this is like the only way that he can see it's going to end. And he's like, no, you have the control in this relationship. You have the power to end it. And Beth just is like, I don't want the control. Like, she's just done. And and it's heartbreaking, and not just because I know Paul dies and loves Sarah. Like, it's not just that. But I mean, seeing their relationship, just poor guys. Both of them.
There's that moment where Beth says, all I know for sure is that you won't protect me. And then he says, you're right. And that's kind of when she's, I think, puts away the gun, because they know they're talking about the same thing. You know, they're not talking about something abstract in the relationship. She knows that he knows, and vice versa. And, you know, you're right. You just tell me what you want. And I thought, you know, that was very heart-wrenching, because it showed Paul being tortured over his role in Beth's life, that he wasn't unsympathetic towards her, and he was forced to do a job. That's what we know, you know, from what we learn in the first season. And so he does the best he can, but there's only so much you can do to pretend to be somebody's boyfriend if it's not real.
Yeah. It's, the whole thing is just, it's so emotional. And again, knowing how this ends for both people in this relationship is even more heartbreaking.
Yeah.
'Cause if we had seen this in season one, it would have been sad, but not nearly as emotional as it is now.
Very good point. Exactly. Yeah, let's see.
Beth leaves to the other man in her life.
Yes. Talk about, not expecting what turned out, right?
Right. Not at all. Art is with his daughter, and they're watching some fun TV show. And Beth arrives and is just like, hey, I just want to sit and watch TV. And so Art sends Maya to bed. And I like how she goes, don't let the bed buddies bite. I thought that was really cute. And then it cuts to Beth is asleep on the couch. Art goes to tuck her in, and she reaches over and puts her hand on Art's arm, and it's just like, look at me, see me. And you can, I'm like, oh my goodness, is this going to happen? Like, what's going on? And yes, in fact, they do get it on.
They get it on. There's a lot of kiss. It's very surprising. I remember the first time I saw it, because they kept any hint of that out of the initial setup of Art and Sarah pretending to be Beth. I didn't really get a whiff of anything more than he was her concerned partner.
Right.
So, surprise. And then, in case you were wondering, the next scene is in Art's bedroom, and they're both asleep, and Beth gets a phone call from the girl from the club, Nia Lucian, the one who has the magnets in her fingertips, whose name is Trina, apparently, and she's worried about her boyfriend. He left to go meet these hardcore neos, she says, a black girl and a white guy, which is the description of the creepy people who buried the first body, who were paramedics, by the way. She said they're going to Aaron's lab, and he's getting some implant removed from his cheek, and Beth is like, why would he let them implant something in his cheek? You know, she said, well, it's supposed to be a biometric study, but then he just, you know, he just couldn't do it anymore. And so Beth's in the building where Aaron's lab is. She's getting directions from Trina. She's popping pills. She's climbing the fire escape. Right. She, you know, peers in through a broken window on this very grimy looking lab, which
said in quotes, because there's nothing sanitary, right. Like nothing sterile in this place.
And she hears Aaron talking to the duo, the paramedic duo, about like, yeah, I can't deal with it anymore. I just want it out. And they're like, okay, that's fine. We'll take care of it, you know? And they give him some kind of gas, which you think is like he's being put under, but he starts choking. And then the way she takes off his cheek, he's clearly dead. They're not removing a biomedic implant. They're removing the side of his face. It's gross. And she, you know, with a little clamps, she pulls out the worm. So we've seen the worm now. We saw it first with Dr. Nealon at the end of season 3, that bloody wormy thing.
Oh, that's
right.
He was
trying to, you know, stick on Delphine, but she shoots him, thankfully. And meanwhile, while this is all going on, the detective walks in, the creepy detective who we've seen before, and he's also, you know, he's apparently like the handler of the paramedic duo, who is being himself handled by, you know, people above him, saying like they're not going to be happy about this. You know, like didn't you at least try to talk him out of it? Because obviously they're running some kind of an experiment, and if all the experimentees, you know, want their worms out, that's going to make a problem for the eventual scientific results.
Yeah. Based on comments, like it seems that it grows.
Yes.
Which, of course, it's a worm, which makes sense. But I'm guessing that they didn't tell them that it would be growing.
Yeah.
Which is probably why they're just like, nope, we're done. Mm-hmm. I'm done. No more.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting and disgusting.
It's really gross. Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
So, you know, then Beth does something where she, you know, like loses her balance a little bit, makes a sound, and they, you know, she has to run away before they catch her. And she runs, you know, down to the alley. She's looking at the emergency medical vehicle, and then hears something behind her, turns around and shoots. And she shoots somebody. She goes up and looks, and there's this Asian woman lying there, dying before her eyes, who is just seems like just a regular civilian and no weapons, no nothing. And she dies. Beth throws up. That was very convincing, by the way.
Yeah.
This is just gross all around.
So gross.
And she calls Art, and he comes, and he coaches her that he's going to set the scene up, give, you know. So there wasn't even a cell phone. Art planted the cell phone. And I was like, well, if you're going to plant something, why not plant a gun? But whatever.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. Like, he's not going to carry around an unregistered like gun, because you couldn't just like put his gun on there or anything.
But Law and Order, come on. We've seen many times where there's people who carry around these unregistered guns for exactly this purpose.
Well, yes, but Art is a good cop. He's not crooked. He's not going to...
He's only semi-crooked.
Right? He's crooked for good reasons.
So he's just like saying like, look, you saw gun. It turned out to be cell phone, which is, you know, how we... he also pulls her identification, and it's Maggie Chen. And so Maggie Chen is the person who was shot by Beth, where in the beginning of season 1, Beth has to go to a hearing for, and but it's not Beth, it's Sarah, and Sarah doesn't know anything about it. That's when Sarah drinks the soap to puke. Let's say puking is very common in this particular story arc. But anyway, that's going back a few seasons. Yet I never expected we would actually get to see the scene where Beth shoots Maggie Chen. I thought that was just a backstory thing that would, you know, we accept it the way it was.
Right. Well, and I always thought that Maggie Chen was related to like the Neolutionists or Dyad or something. Like, I thought she had more like purpose almost. And so finding out that she was just a random like chance, and I mean, we find some connection, but the whole it happened so different than I was expecting this shooting. And it makes more sense now as to why it was eating her up even more. Because it wasn't just a civilian. It was a civilian that was really on accident. Because I thought, oh, you know, this the shooting happened and Sarah was, or Beth was trying to protect herself from, you know, the Neolutionists coming to get her or something. And so even though she's a civilian, it wasn't really a civilian, but it was a complete and utter accident.
Right. I think that's a really good point, because we know that, you know, Beth was really messed up over the shooting, and she, you know, and now that we've seen it, we could see why, because especially her dying right in front of her. So, So then, you know, of course, the whole police force is out there, and the captain, who's saying like internal affairs, is going to take you in for an interview. But don't worry, your union rep will be with you. Here's, you know, Sergeant Duco.
And who is it but weirdly bearded glasses dude, keeping it chill and just like, hey, we'll take care of you. I'm never gonna leave you alone. And you could just see Beth is just like, oh great crap.
So then next we see Beth, she's back at Mika's trailer. She's like, I didn't know where else to go. You were right, Neos are everywhere. And Mika saying, let me make some iced tea. Which seems weird. And then it turns out she's got like Nest tea, like, you know, ice
powdered,
which, you know, she has an exact recipe for, milliliter to milliliter, and makes her some of this, what I would not drink, instant iced tea.
No. But
she is obviously some kind of hacker, and she probably lives on caffeine and sugar, so that's probably the best thing for her.
Well, I'm sure it's cheap and easy, and she can use bottled water because she has that level of paranoia, which now Beth is starting to understand as well. And it's just like, no wonder you live like this.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, man.
Yeah. And, you know, Beth is obviously, she's tired, she's strung out, she's killed a person, she's lied like all over the place. She's obviously been taking, you know, just drugs upon drugs. And she slept with Art, which is, you know, just one more, you know, I screwed my partner two ways, which I was like, well, okay. And then she's like, I can't even think anymore. And Mika, MK, she says, I'll think now. I usually think all night.
And
then Beth like nods off on Mika's couch, and it's very sweet. So that's the penultimate scene.
Right. Because then we have another phone ringing in the darkness. Okay, fine. And it's Art calling Sarah.
Yeah, you think he's calling Beth, right?
Beth, right. And we know that it's Sarah for sure, because Kira pops up, just like Paul did earlier, but this time it's Kira. So like the identifying secondary person in their relationship is the one that helps trigger and identify which clone it is, which was really, really interesting. And Mika has found art. Mm-hmm. So it's been a while since Beth has died, mm-hmm. and all of this stuff has happened. So I hope we find out more about what was going on with Mika. But we know Mika has tracked down Art so that she can tell Sarah that Nia Lucian knows where they are. Mm-hmm. They're coming for Kendall Malone, and they need to get out of Iceland, which... It's so much information. Like, so obviously Mika has been aware of the whole everything.
Yeah.
Like the whole situation and who all the clones are. And so I'm really excited to learn more about who Mika is as a character and mm-hmm. as a clone and what she's been up to. But now I'm all stressed out because Sarah and Kira and Kendall and Mrs. S all need to get out of Iceland. Yeah. Like, get them out of here.
Yeah. She's like, you need to run right now. And Sarah looks out the window and can see like lights like over the, you know, hill. And it's like, oh my God, like right now, literally. So,
yeah. I know. So stressful, but man, what a great way to start season four.
Yeah.
Totally unexpected, totally and completely like fully engrossing and just full of information that I didn't even think I knew that I needed or wanted. And it just, it was beautiful. Such a great episode.
I agree. It was really good. And the ending, especially, you know, switching it back to so-called present day Orphan Black, you know, picking up the story. The final scene of this episode is what we expected the first scene of this episode to be when we turned on the video, to go like, yep, now they're going to pick up, you know, after the happy ending of Sarah and Kira being reunited and Allison winning the election and the whole clone dinner party, you know.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, and Sarah and Kira reunited, yay, and they were fun little giggles in the snow, and nope. Was not any of that until the last like minute and a half.
Yeah.
So it was so good. I cannot wait for the next episode.
That's perfect. Well, you have to wait till the next episode.
Okay, fine. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of SesterCast. You can find us online at SesterCast.com. We are on Twitter at SesterCast. Jean is at MacGenie and I am at Mrs. Soup. We would love if you could leave a rating on iTunes. Let us know what you think and share us with your friends and family, anyone that you have managed to convince to watch Orphan Black. I hope you guys all have an absolutely fantastic day. Until next time.